Good morning. I'm Maeve Conran. Thanks for tuning in to listener-supported community radio, KGNU. Coming up on today's show, there are just 5 days left to fill out the census. If you're one of the 4% of Coloradans who has not yet done it, we'll hear what's at stake. Then a student-teacher climate strike is happening in Denver later today. We'll find out why. Two regular Friday morning features, a food waste tip from John Lendorf, followed by Trends Diary. At 8:30, Duncan Campbell is your host for Connections. And this morning, his guest is Lisa Graves. They'll be discussing what's happening with regard to the Supreme Court, as well as other election issues. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. 18 to 22-year-olds in the city of Boulder may not participate in any gatherings of any size, indoors, outdoors, on or off campus, or with any individuals of any age. This is according to a new public health ordinance issued yesterday that went into effect at 4 p.m. on Thursday. It's in response to a spike in coronavirus cases linked to college students. The order also lists 36 addresses, mostly fraternity and sorority houses, which have been identified for repeatedly violating public health orders. Residents of those houses are subject to a stay-at-home order and must always wear a face covering whenever outside their residence. The public health order is in effect for 14 days. Those who violate it could face up to 90 days in jail and a $1,000 fine. CU Boulder students could also be disciplined by the university and face possible suspension or expulsion. Denver officials have also announced new public health orders targeting the city's college campuses. Denver Mayor Michael Hancock said Thursday that a recent spike in coronavirus cases in the city is connected to students. As part of their health order, additional health screens will be required for students, staff and visitors at colleges, and only dorm residents will be able to enter residence halls. Restrictions are also being placed on fraternities and sororities' activities. Boulder County has reached a settlement with a woman who says excessive force was used on her when she was in the county jail in 2017. Lauren Gotthelf filed a lawsuit alleging that 8 jail employees tased her while she was in a restraint chair. As a result of the lawsuit, a new policy was implemented that prohibits the use of tasers while somebody is in a restraint chair. The county will also pay $400,000 as part of the settlement. Warm temperatures around the Front Range today and possibly another record high, with temperatures getting close to 90 degrees. The deadline to complete the 2020 census is September 30th. That means there are only 5 days left. The state and local agencies have been working hard to get everyone counted, as there are so many things at stake, from funding to a possible additional congressional seat for the state. Natrice Bryant is chair of the state's Complete Count Committee. She was appointed to that role in 2018 by the governor. She said the COVID-19 pandemic has impacted the census in several ways.
The biggest impact for us was that we had to shift as a group to ensure that we were able to get to people. So part of the pandemic and people being unable to go to public gatherings, which is what a lot of our grantees had put forth to bring people together to fill out the census, we had to pivot. And so that changed the outreach that we were doing. It became mostly online. It turned a lot of our public events that we had planned, public gatherings that we had planned, none of those were possible during the pandemic. It also changed the Census Bureau's ability to do some of their enumeration that usually happened starting in April. But because the pandemic hit right around that time, they delayed those dates that they were actually going out and doing what's called non-response follow-up, as well as working with the schools and universities and the prisons and the nursing homes to get counts as well. So that turned into, instead of them physically going to those locations to get counts done, they had to rely on online submission. They had to also rely on individuals emailing them information instead of us being able to actually physically get to those locations. So it definitely changed from a federal level, a state level, and a local level.
The pandemic also changed the deadlines for the census as well. It gave a longer deadline, which was subsequently shortened again. And I know we do have a deadline coming up. What are the dates that people need to be paying attention to?
So we have 6 more days to get our census completed. The date was changed to September 30th of 2020. And so now we have that date is the last day that the census takers will be able to do what's called non-response follow-up. It's the last day that we can complete our census online. So September 30th is the date that we have to already to complete our census for the next 10 years. The initial date was changed because of the pandemic. April 1st was still Census Day, which was where we kicked off a lot of our promotional activities. We had been doing a lot of things with local partners. And then mid-April was when people started to receive their mailed questionnaires. So if they did not respond by phone or by online, they started to get those mailers coming to them. And then July 1st through September 3rd is when they started to work with administrators from colleges, prisons, senior centers and other facilities that are considered group quarters. And then that apportionment number, once September 30th hits and the census closes, in December, the Census Bureau has to deliver those apportionment counts to the president and the Congress. That's required by law.
Do you have a sense as to how many people have completed the census here in Colorado?
To date, as of this morning, we had 96.1% of our population. And to give you kind of a perspective of what that means, 69.4% self-responded, meaning that they did not have to talk to an enumerator. They did it online, did it through the phone. They completed it on their own. The non-response follow-up, which is the enumeration portion where the Census Bureau actually has to go door-to-door to have help people.
How does that compare to previous years?
That percentage was 26.7%. So in total, we are at 96.1% of people counted in Colorado. 2010, we were at about 69 or 70% self-enumeration. So that means that we're right about the same of number of people who actually completed the census on their own. However, self-response rates did increase this year in specific counties. So for example, in 2010, Douglas County had only 77.3% of their population that self-responded. This decade, Douglas County was at 81.1%. Another example of how we have increased our counts and the numbers of people that have responded on their own, Garfield County in 2010 had 60.1% self-response. And then this decade, we had 66.2% self-response. So there's definitely been an increase as far as number of people self-responding. I think that that has a lot to do with people's comfort of the internet, comfort of security. And also we did a lot more promotion this year or this decade than we did in the previous decade. Obviously in 2010, we had different challenges that we had to face. This decade, we had the pandemic. We had some questions about who was going to be counted at the beginning, which is when I talked to you last. And then we had some challenges on dates changing. So there was a lot of other stuff happening that really did mean that we had to push even harder than previous decade to get census counts up.
So if we're at 96% response rate so far with, you know, six or five days to go here in Colorado, do you have a sense of who that 4% are and why they haven't responded?
I do. So we are showing lower response rates in some of our rural Colorado areas. So for example, Grand County has only 29.3% of their population has self-responded. Same with Summit County, about 28% of their self-response rate is recorded. And so the reason that happens, we have a lot of second homes in those areas, and so people may not have traveled back to fill out their census. People may not have received those particular forms. We also have a low count in Hinsdale County, Colorado. And then we have a lower count in San Juan County as well as Mineral County. And so we have really tried to ensure that more people, more enumerators were aware and more people could be hired in those counties to ensure that those counts could happen. But at the same time, you have a lot of things that are happening. We have the pandemic. We have rural Colorado. There's some parts of our state that still do not have as easy access to accessibility to the internet. And so we want to make sure that if they didn't respond by mail, by phone or online, an enumerator actually has to go to that house to knock on the door, come in contact with someone. If they're unable to contact anybody at that home, they can go to the neighbors and ask, questions about how many people live here. Is there someone that lives here on a regular basis? Is it a second home? Those types of things. And so that's what we're starting to see. Those are the areas where we have lower response rates across the state.
I know there was a lot of concern amongst immigrant communities about responding to the census, given what was happening federally and attempts to have people have to state their citizenship and immigration status on the census. I know that was resolved, however, that mistrust lingered. Is that an impact, do you think, in some of these rural areas where there may be a high population of immigrants?
I think that there are some areas that have high populations of immigrants where we still might have that distrust in government. And I think that that distrust comes from a multitude of different areas. It's not wanting to be known where they are. It's not wanting to be counted. It's not that they don't want the funding or anything like that for their particular household. I think there's just a stigma that comes with, well, if people know that I'm here, then there's a possibility that I might, you know, have other repercussions. And that's just not the case. The Census Bureau is not able to share the information, nor are they allowed to share the information with anyone else. And so that information is confidential. But I think sometimes when you have to get over that hump to communicate that to a population of people that typically do not trust government, that becomes an additional challenge.
So ultimately, what's at stake, Natrice, and particularly for post-pandemic recovery? Because, of course, you know, when we spoke 6 months ago, we were just at the start of the pandemic and we talked about what's at stake in terms of possible additional congressional representation and funding for infrastructure and education. Now that we're 6 months into this pandemic, I know that pandemic recovery is also a major issue. So what is at stake for the census?
So the dollars are definitely at stake. We want to ensure that we're able to provide educational opportunities that are equal to in all school districts. So you can see some of the gaps that we have when we have students working online. We have students that are going to school districts where they don't have enough computers to be able to keep their students online. There are students that have a gap because they don't have internet connectivity. Those types of dollars go into those schools so they are able to help maintain things like a pandemic recovery, which means that all their students will have to have online access. We also have funding that goes into the libraries. And so this has shown us really the importance of libraries, because that's where a lot of these students, some of the kids or some of the people who are homeless, they go there to get access to the internet because that's the only place they have access for it. With the libraries being closed, that's definitely changed how people are able or not able to get things that they need. The infrastructure component is also a huge component. But then if you think about that, in addition to infrastructure, as far as transportation and things of that nature, we also have the businesses. And I think one of the things that we're starting to see and have seen since the beginning of the pandemic is the need for businesses to be appropriately funded so that they can have a sustainable future and not just be living month to month. If we had another situation where we had to close down outdoor space or we couldn't allow for people to eat inside restaurants, for example, those businesses need to have sustainable assets to be able to stay open. We are seeing the impact of businesses that have been open for 20 to 30 years that now have to shut down because they just don't have the ability to recuperate. And so that these dollars go into, and businesses can figure out, which communities does it make sense for me to open up in? What community does it make sense for me to provide my services to the individuals that live in that community? And am I going to be successful? So I think it's not just money for funding for schools and infrastructure. There is a large business component, which we have seen the detrimental aspects of what it looks like when there is not the ability for us to have appropriate funding.
Natrice Bryant, chair of the state's Complete Count Committee. There are 5 days left to fill out the census. If you're one of the 4% yet to do it, you have until September 30th. You can go to 2020census.gov. Youth organisers are hosting a student-teacher climate strike today in Denver to mobilise against environmental racism. Rosanna Longo spoke with Renee Millard-Jecon, who's a youth programme coordinator at Spirit of the Sun in Denver and co-founder of Women from the Mountain.
It's critical we mobilise now. We need to have moral panic in the youth that already have the energy, that are ready to go out there, that have been going out there to fight for social justice and climate justice. But the elders and those that are learned with lived experience know the way. So we're trying to bridge those two communities in events like this. And weeks before the election, we have to harness the power of civic engagement. So we need to disrupt the establishment, and we need to fight for everyone having their narratives redistributed, everyone understanding that it's our time to all be active to actually fight for a legitimate democracy, because it's failing.
Tell me about the logistics about the event. Is it open to many students? How are you managing these restrictions around COVID-19?
We're asking everyone that comes to be realistic and understand to follow the CDC guidelines. Wear your mask, have your hand sanitizer, and still keep separate, but understand that this is a collective movement. We're asking for at least 200 people to show to try to give that type of narrative representation, because we plan on showing a picture of those that are there. But we also want everybody to gather with intention. We want to pass the torch to heal the world and a symbol of hope and inspiration. And that does show solidarity of people showing up, but being conscientious that we are in a pandemic. Try to be mindful of each other and wear your mask. This is crucial for our elders in the community, especially BIPOC. It's ultimately a rally, so it's going to include speakers of many generations. We're going to offer intentions and actions to demand direct progress in climate justice, racial justice. But we need everybody to follow COVID safety, both for students and teachers.
I'm speaking with Renee Miller-Chacon. She's talking to me today about this strike called Climate Strike, and it's organized to happen September 25th at 1 p.m. in Denver. Where exactly are you having this?
We will be in Denver on the north side of the Tivoli on the Raria campus. So if you go to the actual Raria campus, look up Tivoli, look on the north side and direction coordinates. We'll be there from 1 p.m. to 5 p.m.
Why is it important to connect environment with social justice and to do it in an intergenerational unity?
It's transformative to help each other now. We all need to be purposeful and understand that we are not going to have someone else save us. We need to save ourselves. And our purpose as individuals is to move collectively, to move forward in this time of change together, and to be seen to seek justice and progress to make a better world together. So that does mean to, even in our indigenous thought, is that the youth might have the energy, but again, the elders know the way. So we need to bridge those two collective spaces together and transform our future.
You addressed the letter asking for support. Why are you choosing to ask to mobilize people in the look for social justice and environmental justice right now when there's a lot of people worrying about climate change with all the fires that we have had during this summer, not only here in Colorado, but in other areas in the United States?
Spirit of the Sun is just one of the organizations on the Colorado Climate Strike. We're partnering this time with the People's Action Collective, the Black Actors Guild, New Era Colorado, Sunrise Movement, International Indigenous Youth Council, Earth Guardians, Future Coalition, 350 Colorado, just cultivating generations together. But Spirit of the Sun, I'm Youth Program Coordinator. My job is literally to help the youth into their next stages of life. And the reality is that we need to realize we are having social injustice. Where there's smoke, there's fire. We're having climate injustice. There is environmental racism. Where these issues are going on, we cannot just sit idly by and do nothing, but we can't make it all doom and gloom. We have to find ways to find resolutions for future generations. We need to give purpose during a pandemic.
During this climate strike, you are also emphasizing that it's going to be a mobilization against environmental racism. Is this something part of the agenda? How is this being seen from the eyes of the organizers?
I myself work for an organization, and I myself represent as an individual. I live in Commerce City, Colorado, which is known for the insidious pollution of Suncor. They right now release plumes of mixed pollutants of hydrogen, cyanide, benzene, and a number of other pollutants during a pandemic and wildfires that are causing even more respiratory issues. I not only have to deal with it in anemia and a number of other issues with my children having nosebleeds, but there are generations within Commerce City that have had to deal with this all the way down to cancer, and every one of them are BIPOC. and that is the only affordable housing that we often are able to afford. And I just bought a brand new house after serving in the Navy with my husband after all these years. We are able and capable youth, but we are still being redlined to the same communities that are being choked to death by the same extractive industries. That is direct environmental racism. This is why we have a moral panic. I have children. I am here for the future generations, and so are these organizers, and so are these organizations that are just as concerned. That's why we're going to the youth and teachers.
You are choosing to bring together all these movements. You know, it's a movement of movements. You're bringing them together for a climate strike. What are your thoughts about striking and voting? Are they two things that go together, or should they be prioritized? Is it also going to be addressed, the need for the youth, those that can, to vote in this election?
Yes. We have to realize that America was found on power dynamics, and it's incredibly important to harness the power of civic engagement. And we need the youth to realize that they have the ability to dynamically influence their areas. I know city council meetings aren't the most exciting things, but we need to run for those spaces. We need to realize it goes beyond just voting, but yes, vote, and we need to mobilize it in a collective way, because that's what disrupts an establishment that has become corrupted and used certain types of power dynamics to oppress.
I have been speaking with Renee Miller Chacon. She works for Spirit of the Sun, and we have been talking about a teacher climate strike that will try to bring justice to Black lives, the climate crisis, and COVID-19 needs in schools. The strike will be meeting at the Tivoli at 1 p.m. this Friday, September 25th. For KGNU, I am Rosanna Longo.
The student teacher climate strike happens today at 1 p.m. at the north side of the Tivoli on the Auraria campus in Denver. Once gathered, the strike will be creating an aerial view, which will need at least 200 participants. Up next, it's another food waste tip from Jan Lendorf.
Hi, it's Jan Lendorf from KGNU's Radio Nibbles, here with another practical way to cut food waste, save flavor, and save some money. For instance, pasta is also on the list of foods we throw into landfills the most. What a waste of a great ingredient. Do this instead. If you make too much pasta or rigatoni or elbows one meal, you can save it for another meal by freezing it. You can pull it out and then top it with sauce and bake it with cheese, and you got a spaghetti pie for dinner. The chewier noodles are great for pasta salad, either the creamy kind or the Mediterranean style with olives and vegetables. You can add noodles to soups and stir fries, or make it Asian with curry or teriyaki. In any case, remember, compost is your last resort. You can find more food waste ideas and tips at news.kgnu.org.
You can catch John every Thursday morning on Radio Nibbles and on Friday mornings, bringing us more food waste tips.
Support comes from the Boulder Library Foundation and Boulder Public Library, providing a community forum to talk about race as part of Boulder Public Library's One Book, One Boulder series, featuring Ijeoma Aluo discussing her book, So You Want to Talk About Race, on Thursday, November 5th at 7 p.m. BoulderLibrary.org.
Up next, it's Trends Diary.
Time now for Trends Diary, where Boulder County residents of all ages share personal experiences that relate to a pressing community need. The focus for now is on our shared need to connect and solve problems, despite the increased isolation we're all experiencing during the COVID-19 pandemic. This project is brought to you in partnership with Community Foundation Boulder County.
Dear Trends Diary, my name is Dara Schumann. I'm a ceramicist working out of Boulder. Like most humans, I'm a creature of habit. I walk the same path and overlook what lies beyond my daily routine, but there's so much more to explore in Boulder. When I saw the grants for the COVID work projects, It was initially hard for me to figure out what to do because pottery cannot be displayed like a mural to be seen by all in an outdoor setting. How can I get the community involved and still do the art I love? I brainstormed and came up with the idea of a ceramic scavenger hunt. I'm making 10 to 15 wheel-thrown ceramic pieces of varying forms. Each day, I'll hide one in my neighborhood by Ideal Market and post little clues as to where they are on my Instagram, which is at Dara Schumann Ceramics. I'm working on this project for two reasons: to incentivize people to explore their neighborhoods, to get people to walk a different path while still social distancing, as well as to share ceramic pieces with others in my community. Each piece will be unique and bring a little joy and beauty to the houses of my fellow neighbors. In placing the pieces, it allows me to explore as well. COVID has forced me to innovate. I usually work out of the community studio provided by the Boulder Pottery Lab. Ceramics requires space and expensive materials and equipment. When the Boulder Pottery Lab temporarily closed, I didn't have those. Thankfully, my grandparents gifted me a pottery wheel, and I recently saved enough money to buy a used kiln. So now I am able to make my art independently from start to finish. These pieces I make for the work project are going to be the first pieces I make in my own home studio.
Feeling inspired? Do you have your own story of making connections or solving problems during this time of physical isolation? Then visit www.commfound.org. Look for Trends Diary and share your experience with Community Foundation Boulder County. Your submission could wind up on these KGNU airwaves.
Thanks for tuning in to the Morning Magazine here at KGNU.